Velkomin í podcastið af hverju Ísland.
Já.
Ég heiti Kládía.
Ég heiti Drífa.
Og við erum hérna með rosalega skemmtilegan þátt fyrir ykkur.
Já.
Í dag ætlum við að tala við hana Evu, Evu Martínek.
Já, hún pólsk.
Hún pólsk og hún skrifaði bók.
Já, frábæra bók. Hún heitir Ísland Pólerað.
Já.
Og tiltölulega nýkomin út.
Það hún Drífa sem fann bókina eða frétti af henni.
Ég sá kyljuna, Já. Ég horf alltaf á kyljuna og sendi henni skilabóð á Facebook.
Já, og sýndi mér bókina, mér fannst hún rosalega skemmtileg.
Hún æði, hún rosalega flott, það prósar og þetta ljóð og örsögur, þú veist þetta og þetta svona Já, ég veit að fyrir kannski fólk sem ekki miklu bóka unnendur að þá, en þú veist, þetta segir allt sögu.
Já.
Það í rauninni.
Og þetta samt fyndið.
Þetta er sorglegt, þetta er hræðilegt, þetta er fyndið.
Bara eins og lífið er.
Eins og lífið er. Og segir sögu mannesku sem að flytja frá Pólandi til Íslands.
Já. Og við tölum við höfundin í dag.
Jep.
Við fengum til dæmis að vita það að bókin upprunulega skrifað á ensku.
Akkurat.
En ég ætla nú ekki að segja mikið frá þessu viðtali. Þetta var rosalega skemmtilegt viðtal.
Mjög skemmtilegt.
Við fengum að vita rosalega margt af því hvernig ferlið var í raunin að skrifa þessa bók, hver var ástæðan fyrir því að Eva flytur til Íslands mm-hmm. og hvernig hún endar á Íslandi og hvernig lífið hennar í Póllandi var.
Já.
En þið þurfum bara að hlusta á þáttin til þess að fá að vita því.
Já.
En annars mælum við rosalega mikið með bókinni, þetta ekki spons.
Nei, þetta alls ekki spons. Nei. Við bara svo hrifnar af henni.
Já.
Og hérna, og þetta svona... Já, það svona mikið orðaleiki
mm-hmm.
í þessari bók.
Mér finnst hún rosalega vel þýtt.
Mjög vel þýtt og hún þýðandi, ég ætla nú að titla hana hérna.
Já.
Það hún Helga Soffía Einarsdóttir sem þýtti þessa bók svona vel.
Mm-hmm.
Og hérna, já, ég bara mjög hrifin og bara endilega annarkvart fara á bókasafni eða bara út í búð að kaupa hana.
Já. Við erum með eintök hérna
Við erum tvö eintök hérna
á bókasafni eða einhver í eigum sem hlustar á okkur
Ég hérna, ég veit ekki hvort að þetta óviðeigandi Má ég lesa eitt
Já.
Stutt
Bara, gefðu það
Góði hirðirinn, Good Shepherd Dobri Pasters Ruslmarkaður Pólska IKEA Svolítið Ef ég hefði samið þetta ljóð, þá væri hann kannski svolítið fordómafullt sko.
En hún má það.
Já, þetta er eins og þú, þetta fyndið fyrir þig.
Já. Það er eitt ljóð sem ég fyndið fyrir drífu.
Já, það er eitt á pólsku hérna.
Já, það er eindar sko að blanda, það er pólska með íslenskum orðum.
Já, þetta hérna.
Já.
Blásum 147, við þurfum kannski ekki að lesa alltaf bókina upp á.
En já, hún Eva rosalega skemmtileg karakter. Og við vorum nú búin að reyna hittana í dágóðan tíma.
Já, svo bara veiktist hann á COVID.
Já, og við líka hérna allavega aðalega ég bara í veikindunum og eitthvað svona þannig að eins og langflestir á þessum tíma. Já. Við erum núna, þetta byrjun april á meðan við erum að taka þetta upp.
Já. Það hefur gengið svolítið erfilega fyrir okkur, við erum ekki ennþá búin að ná að posta neinum þáttum á þessu ári.
Nei.
Eftir februar.
Já. Það er þannig, en ég er búin að klára eldhúsið, þannig
að... Já, var svo við það var verða að endun í eldhúsið í húsinu og Kládía var þar fremst í flokki, þannig að hún búin að
vera mjög gessi.
En við erum sem sagt að vinna í því núna að ná að taka upp nokkra þætti áður en við förum mm-hmm. að publisa.
Já, við erum komin með tvo, þannig að það er tveiti viðbútar og já. Þá fáum við að hlusta á fyrstu
hóttu. Og já, svo þið vitið af því þá er þetta viðtaltekið á ensku.
Já. Það er kannski gott að taka það fram.
Hún farin að, kann nokkra íslensku, sagði hún okkur.
Við höfum náttúrulega sent post á hana
á íslensku og allt svoleiðis. En eftir COVID þá segist hún að vera náða að gleyma og hún hefði ekki
sjálfstraustið
í það að fara kannski í djúpt viðtal á íslensku.
Það er rosalega margir sem hafa einmitt lent í þessu að gleyma hlutum og svona eftir COVID. Sko.
Já.
En já, annars erum við bara góðar.
Já.
Þessar... Styttist í páska
Júps.
og sumafríð en við ætlum að reyna að koma vel út
já,
já taka upp
gera smá lager og nú fyrir við að geta postað
já,
einhverjum þátt
já, og þið finnið okkur á Facebook
já
af hverju Ísland podcast og við erum á Instagram af hverju Ísland
mm-hmm.
og það hægt að senda okkur skilaboð á af hverju Ísland at gmail.com mm-hmm. en á sama tíma ég líka með claudia@vestmanneyjar.com og þú ert
.is.
Já, .is. Og þú ert driva@vestmanneyjar.is og skoðum það líka og þið finnið podcastið okkar á öllum helstum hlaðvarpsveitum
og erum á YouTube líka
já og YouTube til dæmis ef þið viljið horfa á okkur því þetta var tekið upp, hún var bara í bænum og við hér,
já.
Gegnum Zoom þannig ef þið viljið horfa á okkur og hana, mm-hmm. þá hægt að gera það á YouTube
geggja sættir í dag
ég setti líka góðan filter á okkur
Sett þá með maskara og allt?
Já, ég líka. Sérðu hvað við erum fínar?
Ég við ekki bara...
Allir í YouTube-in.
Ég bara byrja þetta bara.
Jú, gjör svo vel.
Gjör svo vel.
So, hi. Welcome af hverju Ísland. Can you tell us your name and where you're from?
So, my name is Eva Marcinek and I'm from Poland.
And why Iceland?
It's a long and complicated story, so I wrote a book about it.
Yes, this one?
Yes, Polishing Iceland, Iceland Polaraf. Why Iceland? When I was thinking actually about this question earlier, I was dividing it into two, because there's one story behind why I came to Iceland and then why I stayed in Iceland. And those are two different stories.
We would like to hear them both.
Yeah.
So I came to Iceland just by chance. It was, I was never interested in Iceland before coming, I'm sorry to say, but I wasn't one of those people who love Sigur Rós and Björk and, you know, no, I was the Southern girl. I really loved Italy and Spain and I was studying in Italy as well. So I was more connected to the South of Europe. But then things were happening in my life. I had a breakup of relationship and I really wanted to go somewhere just to have a break from my life and kind of take a breath. And I was working in a cultural center in Wrocław in southwest of Poland. And we had a project, cultural project in Iceland that was just starting. So I thought, okay, I can go to Iceland then. So I went for internship at BioParadise. And it, at the same time, within the internship, I was starting the project of collaboration between Poland and Iceland. And it was the subject of audio description. So like cinema or theater for people who are blind or visually impaired.
When was this?
That was summer of 2013. Mm-hmm. So not knowing much about Iceland, I was trying to prepare myself and I was watching movies and finally listening to Sigur Rós. So I got some recommendations from my friends, but yet it didn't prepare me on how big of a culture shock and weather shock it was for me that summer.
Did you care? Yeah, you came during summertime.
Yes, and it was 2013. I don't know if you remember, it wasn't the best summer.
And the winter is never good.
Yeah, but I would never plan to stay. So I'm one of many who come here for a moment and without a plan to stay, but they stay. So I was so convinced that I'm gonna come back that I was already buying an apartment in Poland. And I remember my dad telling me, no, you're gonna buy when you come back after 3 months. And I was like, no, I really want to buy it now and come back and have the apartment. But he convinced me and I didn't buy it. I was very lucky with this because after 3 months, I knew that I want to continue the adventure with Iceland.
And you didn't move back. So you've been in Iceland.
I went back. I didn't move back. I went back to quit my job, pack my things, sell my car, like, you know, close that chapter and move to Iceland and start afresh.
Mm-hmm. So it's mainly work that made you stay in Iceland or was there something else?
No, after 3 months, I was already done with the internship at BioParadis. So when I came back, I needed to find a job, and I found a job as a waitress at the restaurant, and it was my first waitering job. So I wasn't very skilled. And I moved, I decided to stay, I don't know, just because I felt that Iceland was so different and so beautiful, and I was kind of still in a shock trying to embrace what Iceland is as a country and place. But amazingly to me, in those 3 months, I made so many friends, and I just didn't want to leave them. And I was very curious how my life would be in Iceland. And also, when you break up with someone, and I was in a long, I was 9 years with that person, you kind of start a new life without it, without that person, without the relationship. But it happened to me that I started it in Iceland, and I just wanted to continue it.
Mm-hmm. How old were you?
27.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell us maybe a little bit about your background? Where were you born? How was your childhood and everything?
Mm-hmm. So I am from a small town, 30 kilometers from Wrocław. So Wrocław is the big city in Lower Silesia. It's the capital of the region, where I was studying culture studies and creative writing. But I was born in a small town 30 kilometers away, in a very old little town. Like now in Icelandic scale, I don't consider it that little anymore. Around 10,000-15,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a very happy childhood. And to be honest, this is also what connects me to Iceland so much, because when I was when I lived for so long in this small town, so I did like the primary, secondary and high school there, it's a great community, and I always had so many friends there, and we all knew each other, and I could walk everywhere. And then I moved to university for my studies, and I spent, I think, around 8 years in the city. But when I came to Iceland, suddenly I felt the same small town kind of community,
mm-hmm.
where I would go out and just meet people, friends on the streets. And I really love it. You know, I go to a swimming pool or to a cafe, and there's always someone who I can greet or chat with. But at the same time, Reykjavik was offering the same quality that a big city in Europe offers. So the theaters, concerts, music. And to be honest, I've never been as active culturally with music as when I arrived to Iceland. I remember my first Airwaves festivals, and I was just overwhelmed with it,
mm-hmm.
in a positive sense.
Did you speak English when you came to Iceland? Yes, okay. So you learned English in school in Poland, or?
Yes, I started very early. We started in kindergarten. I remember my first word was sausage. And I loved it so much. And I know that my dad was also trying to teach us English. I think that was like the idea after the communism collapsed. The people stopped learning Russian. They started investing in the Western languages. And my dad really wanted us to know English for some reason. And yeah, and then I had English and German throughout my education. But when I came to Iceland, my English was a bit rusty. And I remember a friend that I was working with in this audio description project. We met when I came to Iceland, and then we haven't seen each other for 3 months. And then she invited me for dinner after 3 months. And she gave me this kind of nice, but also like a painful compliment, saying, wow, in 3 months, your English improved so much. I didn't understand you before.
Oh, oops. But did you start to try and learn Icelandic right away or?
No, in the first 3 months, I didn't take it seriously because I didn't want to stay. I didn't plan to stay. Mm-hmm. But then when I came back after sorting out my life in Poland and closing some things there, I started to learn, but it was a linguistic shock for me. Like it was almost impossible for me to remember anything. Mm-hmm. And I have this anecdote that even the day I arrived in the summer of 2013, and I wanted to tell the bus driver that I'm going to stay on Loigavegur, I couldn't say it. Mm-hmm. Something in my mouth was not working, and I was trying to say so much like the name, but I was just saying loyal. It wasn't coming. And then he said, this is actually far away, it's few hours drive from Reykjavik. He fought the Loigavegur in the highlands,
Yeah.
I was so confused. Yeah, but it was hard. Like even I lived on Vesturgata, mm-hmm. and to be honest, for years it didn't mean anything for me. Those were just sounds. Mm-hmm. I didn't see like Vestur and Gata, which I understand the West Street. Mm-hmm. But the first years it was just Vesturgata. It was just random sounds together that mm-hmm. I kind of needed to remember, but I had no way. Mm-hmm. How to?
Mm-hmm. But you speak some Icelandic now.
Yes, mm-hmm. I'm very shy, but I speak. Yeah, I do speak.
Did you learn Icelandic? Did you go to any courses or?
Yes, it was also a long road. I did 4 levels of Icelandic for foreigners at different schools. I had two private teachers. Now I have the third private teacher. I was working in a restaurant and I was trying to be able to serve in Icelandic. So I kind of like learned like a monkey some things. So I could really talk a lot about fish, but I could never talk about my life, you know. So the vocabulary was there. Yeah. And then I was working with kids in Fristund in after school care. Mm-hmm. And that really opened me because I had no choice, you know, if a child is crying or they want something and they don't speak English, like, mm-hmm. you know, like I needed to. And I also was repeating so much after them. That was mm-hmm. really, I always recommend everyone working with children. And I went to art school for 1 year and it was in Icelandic. So I also like, you know, another vocabulary came in. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it's like a mosaic of ways to get my vocabulary and grammar right. But I really would like to study Icelandic for foreigners at the university because I feel like I still need like proper structure and mm-hmm. There are so many gaps in my Icelandic. Mm-hmm. So what I'm doing now is I'm trying to enrich my vocabulary because I noticed this is the biggest problem for me whenever I speak Icelandic. Then I switch a bit to English just because I don't know how to say this mm-hmm. word or that word.
Talking about your book a little bit, because you write about it not being able to speak good Icelandic to your customers.
Yes.
So you had bad feedback from customers, Icelandic customers.
I had all kinds of feedback. Yeah. All kinds of feedback. I was, after moving to Iceland, I was very lost. And it was my first waitering job. So I didn't also know the job to mm-hmm. be like best in service. And then I was hired without having Icelandic. So I assumed... Mm-hmm. Why not? If someone hires me to do it, then like no one will mind. But people did mind and reactions were, it was 2013. I think now we are more used to having people in service, especially after the tourism blooming. So we are more used to people in service speaking English. But in 2013, I was one of the first waitresses who didn't speak Icelandic. Some people didn't want me to serve them because I didn't speak Icelandic, and they would say, like, no service. And that was very hurtful for me because I was just doing my job, you know. So I felt like we were all kind of stuck, you know, the people who hired me to serve. They hired me for some reason. I felt in a way secure because someone hired me, but then I cannot do my job properly because I'm missing Icelandic. And then Icelandic customer comes to an Icelandic restaurant and they want to feel at home, but they don't. So, you know, like, although it was painful for me, I knew that we are all in a mess here. And we are all having a problem, you know. It's not only me, you know.
Have you experienced prejudice from other places in Iceland?
I think this is like the most the essence of the prejudice. Like, I like the prefix pre. So it means that something is before, you know, something is there before you. So prejudice, when I came to Iceland, I thought I will be like a carte blanche. I will start my new life. Everything is going to be fresh and I'm closing something behind and I'm just starting new life. And when I arrived I started working as a waitress, because when I was in Bio Paradise, I didn't feel any sort of conflict with me being there, my identity. But when I started working as a waitress, then I realized that there is a conception. So there is this preconception about what a person from Poland is, who is the Polish person. And that was very much in a conflict with how I wanted to be the carte blanche. You know, I wanted to start afresh, and the people already tell me what they know, not about me directly, but what they know about Polish people. And those Polish people they were referring to, those Polish people weren't back at home in Poland. Those were some kind of Polish people, I don't know, living in Breitholt, or people they met somewhere in Iceland, that I felt very disconnected from, because I didn't know those Polish people. So, you know, like when I lived in Italy for a very short time, 6 months, people would be very enthusiastic about me being Polish, but they would refer to like Polish Pope, Polish food, and Krakow. So they would be like references to back home in Poland, whereas here, No one was saying like, oh, I've been to Kraków or Warsaw. People would say, oh, I know this Polish guy and he's drinking a lot and he's working a lot. He doesn't speak English very well, you know. And I was like, I don't know him.
And you are not the same, but people compare.
And those, you know, we say...
Were you experiencing this in the beginning when you were new here? Do you still get references like this?
No, absolutely not. It was just the beginning. And I think it's also a very vulnerable position to be a waitress. You know, like waitress, being a waiter, you're paid to be nice and polite. And it's a position of power that someone who is paying you, someone who's sitting at the table ordering food from you, they think that they can treat you the way they want. And they can, you know, it's not an equal situation, which is also very interesting because that shows like the real manners of people, or, you know. So some people just felt comfortable enough to leave me a comment or to tell me something that maybe wasn't the most polite or friendly. but there were also beautiful people I met working as a waitress, and I also present them in the story, you know, people who were sharing. I don't know why a restaurant is such a place when people, and bars, when people just want to open themselves, but there were people who were sharing their stories and their problems with migration, not necessarily, you know, them also trying to find their way through it, not necessarily being against it, just, you know, like this Icelandic woman who had a Polish boyfriend and she learned Polish words, and now she's stuck with this Polish vocabulary without him because they broke up. Or the Icelandic very mature man, businessman, who changes his surname to be closer with his Croatian wife. And those are true stories. And in general, the book I wrote is, this is almost like creative nonfiction.
Mm-hmm.
So all the conversations really happened, and mm-hmm. all that is in book more or less happened. I'm just playing a bit with, like, you know, mm-hmm. the form and the poetry, mm-hmm. but those are very real stories.
Mm-hmm. You wrote the book in Polish?
No, in English.
You wrote it in English, and then somebody translated it for you in
Polka, Sofia Einarstotir, she translated it.
Yeah. I for our listeners, I really recommend this book. It's funny, it's sad, it's scary.
It's life.
It's life. Yeah, it's really, really good.
And how was it? Did you write it while working here, or how was the process?
So when I moved to Iceland, so I never felt very secure with my writing back home in Poland, although I studied there, although, you know, it's my language, it didn't work for me somehow. And when I moved here, I had this hope that maybe I could start writing more, because I assumed I would have more time or less kind of mental pressure with an easier job, like intellectually easier, but physically harder. And I was trying to slowly write about like Icelandic nature and some stories, but then I joined a workshop for international women in the library, city library in Reykjavik, and so it was a group of women of Icelandic and with Icelandic and foreign background, and we met together with Icelandic Canadian teacher Angela Rawlings, and she encouraged us to write stories, and she was the one to encourage me to try to maybe write in English so you can share it with us. And that was the first time I wrote in English. I never would even think about changing languages, and then she also suggested, you can, you know a few words in Icelandic, you can play with them, they are yours, as long as you can, you know, as you, when you know them, they are yours. So I was also playing with Icelandic, and I think I wrote the first short story at this workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, and I was working back then as a waitress. I was working as a waitress for 6 years, first 6 years. It's just a very easy job for also creative people, you know, to have, like, you can work with your schedule. It's very easy. The same, the after school care with children. I met many actually artists working with children just because they need half time job to secure some money, but have also time for their creative work.
Mm-hmm.
How long did it take you to do this book?
I started in 2015, and I had it ready, I think, around 2018, so maybe 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't ready to publish it. I kind of started getting even like proposition to translate and publish it quite early, because since I started writing it, I've been participating in many reading events, and I've been invited to many like literary festivals or evenings where I would share it. So the story, even if it wasn't published, it got quite popular and I got some recognition. But I was so insecure, because I know that the story is written in English, that it's such a mix of languages. In Icelandic, it's not as visible, but in the original English version, there's much more. It's like a mix of mostly English and Icelandic and a bit of Polish. And then I met Paulina Jonsdottir, who is a theater director, and we started a project together called Reykjavik Ensemble, which is like international theater based in Reykjavik that is promoting foreign-born artists. And Paulina wanted to stage my text, so she made adaptation, and we had a play in 2020 in Tjarnarbio in Reykjavik. And that gave me a lot of courage and a lot of, optimism that maybe it can work.
Mm-hmm. But still, I will publish the English version of the book also.
It's going to be published early summer. So it's already in preparation, and it's going to be published by Ospresan, which is like a multilingual writing collective.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Have you been writing for a long time? Have you been writing your whole life for,
Yes. Sorry. Yes, my whole life, I think. I always liked drawing as a child. Mm. But when I look back now on my drawings from that period, they are mostly stories, just because I couldn't write, I would draw them. Mm-hmm. And then I love books and I love reading, and I was reading a lot as a child and teenager. And my dad is a great reader. So I was sometimes thinking that from the love to my dad, I wanted to also write books he would like. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And so I've been, I think from since I was 13, I was already telling my friends that I'm going to be a writer in future.
Mm-hmm. And this is your first book?
This is my first solo a book, so it's my debut. I've been published in magazines and group publications, but this is, yes, this is the long awaited step. Mm-hmm. for a writer.
Can we expect more books from you?
Yes.
Novels or more poetry? Or
No, I think poetry works for me mostly like a tool and kind of ornament, but I prefer prose and also nonfiction. Mm-hmm. Currently, I'm working on a book about, it's a nonfiction, but also in this kind of poetic style, about foreign-born writers living in Iceland. So I'm kind of taking the focus from me, mm-hmm, toward others like me that I know, because we are very close group, and those are my friends, and each of them has amazing story.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the book is going to be published in Poland?
I think it's going to happen sooner or later. We are bringing the play now to Gdańsk, to Shakespeare Theater, and there was a conference about it, and the book was mentioned, and there were many people very curious and interested if it's already translated. So I should get my efforts to translate it to Polish. It's just very weird to be explaining that all that's in Polish, because now I'm mostly writing in English.
Yeah.
And I got used to living in Iceland and trying to convey the story for a Polish reader, but I feel just very lucky with the interest and the reviews and the feedback. So I will definitely do it.
Mm-hmm. How is your life now? Are you working somewhere? Are you focused only on the books? How is your life now?
Life is great. My life is great right now. I've been working with Paulina Jonsdottir in Reykjavik Ensemble for 2 years, 2.5, I think, now. And we are part of many projects. So we get funding from the Government Theatre Fund, National Theatre Fund, and the City of Reykjavik, and some Nordic grants. So I work as a contractor for the theater company. Plus, I was very lucky this year. I received Listamannalaun for 3 months. So I'm currently just focusing on writing and, yes, doing that.
Since you moved to Iceland, have you, do you have any traditions that you brought with you from Poland, like around Christmas or Easter or Polish Independence Day? Or
I'm a big fan of Polish stores in Iceland. So I shop regularly and I have my favorite one.
Not only me.
That I go quite often, and I like to keep the food, the traditional food, like for Easter and Christmas. But for me, it's blended so much with other traditions. My partner is British, raised in France, so he brings other dishes to the table, and I love Icelandic Christmas food, so it's all mixed, I think.
Mm-hmm. Do you visit Poland often?
Yes, very often. I'm one of among my friends, I'm one of the people who are going to Poland every few months.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, COVID was a problem, but I still was able to visit, I think, twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, I'm trying to visit my parents 3 to 4 times a year.
Mm-hmm.
And they also visited Iceland twice. And their first visit to Iceland changed everything for our relationship, because when I moved to Iceland, they couldn't understand why I'm so far away from them. And they weren't very happy with my decision, but when they came and they saw it, everything changed. And my dad printed a big picture, a photo he took in Stykkisholmur, and put it in their bedroom. And my mom, in her little kind of office in our apartment, she had a map of Iceland above her desk for a long time. So she could, whenever I would say, "Hey, mom, I'm there," she could pointed at the map. Oh, she's there.
Yeah. Are you an only child, or do you have any siblings?
I have older sister. Mm-hmm. She has a family, and they also came for a visit once only.
So they don't live here. They live in Poland.
Yeah, all my family lives in Poland, and among my cousins and like the further family, there is no immigrants really, so I'm the only one living abroad.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for the family it was kind of a shock, but now people got used to it.
Mm-hmm. But how was it for you? I know many people move here because they know someone or because they have family here and want to get a job and earn some money. How was it for you? You didn't have anyone.
I didn't have anyone. I just wanted to escape my life. And I didn't take it seriously. It was just for 3 months. I'm just going to go there and come back. So, and also if I went for internship, that kind of gave me a structure. You know, it was very easy for me because I didn't came to look for a job. I came to go to Bio Paradis every day, and I met wonderful people there. And I just had I had very easy beginning. And also the project that I came with, we collaborated with art school, Mintista School in Reykjavik, and theater in Hafnarfirði. So I needed to meet them and talk with them and do project with them as well. So I had so many connections in the first 3 months. So then when I moved here, it was just about finding job that would give me financial security. But I had so many friends and so many connections, and I knew all the festivals and I knew where to go. And I'm very art and culture oriented. So that was very important for me. And that was very, I think, the reason I fell in love for Iceland. after coming, because although I was working in arts and culture before, I haven't been as exposed, mm-hmm. you know, like just Reykjavik during airwaves, you know, like now I'm used to it, but that was like, I was on my way to Bio Paradis and there was a concert in Bio Paradis. There was a concert in store, in a pharmacy, I remember. Everywhere there was just music and art, and I just loved it so much.
What was the hardest part about moving to Iceland?
I think the disconnection with my family, and there was a time that I didn't want to have calls, like Skype calls with them, because it was in a way too hard. And I was just exchanging emails and sending texts. And I know that it's not nice to be a child that moves abroad and then she doesn't even want to call. But if I would call, it would make me cry. So I kind of needed, I think those two first years, I wasn't very available for my family because I just needed to establish my life and mm-hmm. kind of, just go through it, this grief of leaving your family behind. Language. So I don't know what's the solution, but I wish someone would sit with me when I arrived here and just tell me how this language works and really take me by my hand and just lead me through this language and, you know, explain it, because I feel very lucky that now after 9 years, I understand the language, you know, so I can Google the words and I can check them in Icelandic dictionary. And, you know, like I understand how it works, but in the beginning, it was just like a code for me, mm-hmm. like some kind of scripture that I couldn't uncode. Mm-hmm.
But what was the easiest part?
Friends and community and support. I received so much support here for all my like projects related to literature or writing or culture. And friends and openness and the space and I can just go on and the peace. It's just such a wonderful place. I couldn't believe how peaceful I am when I arrived. You know, like suddenly everything just tuned down and I was I can breathe.
Mm-hmm. For us, it's because we live here in Westman Islands. Mm-hmm. When we go to Reykjavik, the stress levels go up.
Yeah. The traffic.
Oh, the traffic.
You can't even call it traffic because in bigger cities, it's worse. But for us living here and going to Reykjavik, it's definitely not calming.
I know, because whenever Westman Islands, they are like a point that I always want to show to the guests visiting, because for me, it's like, it's different world. It's
have
like,
you been here?
Yes, many times.
Okay. I love
it. Actually, it was my first trip in Iceland when I arrived. That was one of the first trips I made. And yeah, I love it. It's like island on an island, you know, it's another level. I love it. It's amazing. Visually, it's so stunning. You know, the colors. I all love like the green lava, the red or black lava, city. Yeah, it's wow. It's amazing.
Sometimes when the weather is good and the lighting is good and you look around and sometimes, wow, I think I live in a painting.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
When I wake up, I see the view outside my window and I'm like, wow, mm-hmm. people pay for it. Mm-hmm. But I have one more question. What was the most shocking thing about coming to Iceland? You talk about cultural shock and everything. What surprised you the most?
Yes, I have one thing. I don't know if you can call it Thetaredast or like I used to say that, and I heard it's not me who is saying that, but I used to say that Iceland is Italy of the North.
Okay.
And I heard that already from someone else.
Okay.
I love Italy, and this is where I was. I went for my student exchange. And when I came to Iceland, I realized, wow, okay, it's just like another Italy, just it's different, you know, but how relaxed people are. And I was in such a rat race in Poland, mm-hmm. working in a culture institution would seem like it sounds like it's an easy job, but I was so stressed. It was such a pressure, so many projects going on. And then I came and started working within culture here, and people were just drinking coffee and chatting and doing great events, but everything was flowing and it was peaceful, and, you know, like going to swimming pool after work. And yeah, I just...
Maybe I just, the last 24 hours before the event, then everything went crazy.
Yeah.
Like everywhere. But oh, we just finish like, this. It's tomorrow.
Just every day seemed to be more pleasure, more about pleasure of life than about, you know, being so insecure about your job, you know, because I think this was the problem for me in Poland, that I always felt that there is 5 people that can take my job away from me. So I need to be the best of the best. Otherwise, they will, you know, let me go. And yeah, so I think that was one of the culture shocks. And then I would say feminism as well. Like, I wasn't exposed to it. I knew, you know, feminism as a part of the discussion in the mainstream, but I learned it in, like, I really got it in me after moving here. And actually it was Icelandic boyfriend of mine who started pointing things in my life, and he was like, this guy should not treat you like this, this person should, you know, like, they cannot treat you like this just because you're a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very confused in the beginning, but then it all got to me, like, and I cherish it so much. And actually yesterday I had a call with a person in Poland, after which I wanted to cry because someone patronized me on the call just because it was an older man.
Mm-hmm.
And he felt like it's so normal in Poland to be patronized in at work, like, you know,
a woman, young woman,
especially younger woman, you know, woman in general, but younger woman.
Yeah,
you're like a secretary, you're not a project manager to them.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so I it was a shock, but it was a positive shock, but I needed to learn and kind of establish myself with those values as well.
Mm-hmm. What are your plans for the future? We know about books coming up. You've been talking about your boyfriend that is British and French. But are you planning to stay here? Are you going to travel? What is the plan?
So Iceland will always be my home. There are questions with family, because as my parents are getting older and his parents are getting older, there is a question of care and not much time left and where we want to spend our time. But I do see myself in Iceland, and I had this fun conversation with him as well when I said that I would like to be buried in Iceland. So I see it as a place where, you know, of a final rest, of the final destination. So as I need to accept that I will need to travel a lot and maybe be in Poland for a year, or, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to take it step by step. I really love Iceland that much that I want to be buried in Iceland.
That's a nice conversation to have with your boyfriend.
we are entering this phase of relationship.
What are his thoughts? Since he is English-French, does he want to stay in Iceland also? Or?
Because he's English-French, it's already complicated for him, whereas Iceland is kind of a safe place.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he would like to, because he's British, raised in France. So although he studied in UK, he never really lived here. So I think he would like to live in UK for some mm-hmm. time.
Mm-hmm.
But then when we are in UK, he wants to be in France. And yeah, it's...
And when he's in France, he wants to be in Iceland.
All our community and our friends are in Iceland. So I think that's like very strong point.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, is there something that the Icelandic government or Iceland in general could do to make it easier for people to move to Iceland and settle down here?
There's something about the language, I think, because it took me a while also to understand why it's so important to speak Icelandic, why it's so important to respect the language and really, you know, like I think Icelandic culture would disintegrate it if not this purity of the language. And also in an economical sense, you know, like everything could be replaced if we would just all started talking English. And we are talking English now, so I'm not helping here. But I think it's very important to make it as accessible and easy for people to learn Icelandic and kind of imprint in their head why it is so important. Because I heard that it's important, you know, it's so important. And I felt the attitude, if I don't speak Icelandic, maybe I'm not, I cannot fully participate. But I think people don't really understand why it's so important, like that we can cherish all that is and we can like participate in all this generosity and beautiful culture, beautiful land, but that without Icelandic it's gonna collapse. Mm-hmm. So like people need to understand the reason, not only be told you need to learn Icelandic, or you know, if you don't speak Icelandic then mm-hmm. I'm sorry, you know. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how to do it, but it is a difficult language to learn, especially for people who are not from the Nordic countries. So there must be a way we can make it easier for people or more friendly. And actually, me and Paulina, we are at Reykjavik and Samp. We want to start teaching Icelandic with the use of drama. So for people just, you know, to have fun while learning and just be more encouraged and feel self-secure when speaking Icelandic.
I think Icelandic people also have to be tolerant of people trying to speak Icelandic, even though they don't do it like they were perfect. Born here. Yeah. You know, they don't have the greatest vocabulary, but they are trying. And I think Icelandic people need to be more understanding and tolerance towards that, so mm-hmm. that people are willing to learn more
and not always switch to English. Mm-hmm. If someone is trying, just keep on going with them. Mm-hmm. But I mean, people are used to going the easy way, so mm-hmm. I understand it also, but yeah,
maybe because also Icelanders are always in a hurry. so that might be it also.
I have a question for you. What do you think, any advice or tips for people moving to Iceland? Something you would like to know when you moved here, but you didn't know. So some advice for people moving now that they should know, you would want to know, but you didn't.
Very good question. And I really don't know. I think it would be practical. I think I would just give them all the knowledge that I had about using the opportunities that are there. So like the workers' union grants for learning Icelandic and how that works. So the people, I think maybe that's the problem, that some people arrive here and they work hard, but they don't know all the benefits of of when they start working, when they start contributing to the system, what they can take back. Because I did a year of art school here and I did plenty of courses and it was all paid through my job from my money that went to the unions. And actually I didn't, you know, like it felt like I've been studying almost for free. So I think things like this, and then also for newcomers, and I do it because I work with unemployment offices in Vesturland, and I also did it for the Westfjords, for people to know that they can do their own project. You know, if they want books in Polish in the library, then they can go to the library and they can request the library to buy those books, you know, to enrich the collection. If they want to have, I don't know, films in Polish, then they can go to Bioparadis and say, hey, let's bring Polish movies because there is Polish community, which is already happening in Bioparadis. Mm-hmm. But like what I love about Iceland is that there is so much space for things to happen, and people are very open, institutions are very open, like libraries and national and the national institutions and local governments, and they are very welcoming with initiative. Mm-hmm. So I think I would also encourage all people who are coming to just, if they see that they are missing something here, or if they know that something would be of value in their local community, that they can really make it happen, because it's a wealthy country. It's usually wealthy local governments. There is money, you know, there is openness, there is interest. So yeah, it's really possible. It needs the initiative of the people who are coming.
Mm-hmm. One more thing. When you came here, you came during summertime. How was winter for you? We've had a podcast with other people that said that it was quite shocking because they see all these beautiful pictures and everything come during the summertime and it's beautiful, it's a good summer, and then the winter comes and
people... All the darkness.
Yeah. How was it for you?
So my first winter, I was keeping it inside until I think March. And I lived through it, but in March I couldn't, and I was already crying. And I remember I went to my flatmate and I was like, my life is so horrible, you know, I feel so unhappy, and I was crying. And that was a friend of mine who lived in Iceland now maybe 20 years, and he was just, ever relaxed, that's not you, that's darkness. Yeah. And I was like, no, it's me, something is wrong. And he's like, no, Eva, just let go, it's darkness. So it was quite dramatic the first winter. Yeah. But this is what I'm always like, and my friends as well, trying to tell ourselves, this is not about, you know, when the kind of depressive mood comes, or in the winter time, or tiredness, and I just noticed, like, I don't want to see people anymore. I just want to be in bed watching shows and maybe going to the pool, but that's it. That I need to tell myself, it's okay. You know, that's the response to the weather, darkness, and that's, I mean, okay.
Icelandic people have this too.
Yeah, after being born here. Yeah. So it doesn't get better, you just have to acknowledge it.
Yes. And then we all know summer will come and we'll all get like hyper happy.
Yeah. I don't have any more questions.
Is there anything you would like to add to what we've been, something we didn't ask you about or something?
No, I think although I am very chatty, I think we covered most of it. I'm just super happy that we could meet and chat. I had a lovely time with you. Thank you.
Yeah, it was really nice meeting you on screen.
Finally.
and thank you for sharing your story.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Keep on writing.
Yeah.
We love your book.
Thank you very much.